Our second case is United States against Arbitani. Counsel for defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, judges of this honorable court, may it please the court. This case is about two things, meaningful relief and deterrence. Meaningful relief for Airman First Class Arbitani, who was illegally punished 250% more than a jury believed his crimes were worth, and deterrence of those who allowed such mistreatment. There are three maxims I'd like to focus on that I believe are supported by case law and dispositive of this case. Before I do that, however, I want to make one thing clear. This is an Article 13 case. So contrary to the government's brief, we are not arguing sentence appropriateness. We are not arguing an Article 66 issue. That was not granted. With that in mind, the maxims that I want to focus on are, first, an appellant should receive meaningful relief for illegal punishment, and I'll focus on the legal punishment aspect. Two, relief can include setting aside a punitive discharge. And three, where relief is applied towards things that are not readily convertible, like a punitive discharge, like dismissal of charges, it's a question of proportionality.
How does a review of meaningful relief fit in with sentence appropriateness? Are they two completely separate animals, or do they merge at some point?
The sentence appropriateness can consider a variety of things, so I think it can include meaningful relief, which appears how the Air Force Corps reviewed it. However, meaningful relief requirement, at least for illegal punishment, is a separate entity because its authority is found in Article 13 as opposed to the Article 66.
Does that mean that the court first determines whether there's meaningful relief and then determines whether it's appropriate in light of everything else in the case, or is it a blended decision? Is there a sequence involved there?
I think the requirement for meaningful relief is a separate consideration in and of itself. And when they look at Article 66 and deciding what sentence should be approved, they need to consider all factors, including their view on meaningful relief. So it's included in that respect, but it is a separate consideration. I think it takes precedence first before you get to the appropriateness of the sentence. Now, with appellant should receive meaningful relief for illegal punishment, my focus here is a fundamental difference between lawful confinement and unlawful confinement.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
We're dealing with 13 here. Does 305 occupy the field?
No, Your Honor.
It does not preempt the field?
No, it's
13
not.
Is broader than 305.
Yes.
There, if you drew a Venn diagram, there would be a 13 but not 305 area.
Much like Article 10 in 707, Article 13 reigns supreme. 305 has different provisions, although oftentimes it can be an alternate basis for relief. And so the cases cited by the government generally refer to lawful confinement, which this court has addressed in Smith and said lawful confinement does not require credit for a variety of reasons. In that case, the jury was specifically instructed to consider the pretrial restraint, and ultimately, in light of that, adjudged no confinement. That did not entitle him to credit. We're dealing with something different. Article 13 involves a presumption of innocence. That's what's at play here, unlike the former Jeopardy cases or lawful confinement cases.
In your opening statement, TikTok, you said that ultimately your position is the person should receive meaningful relief that is not disproportionate. Is that correct?
It's a question of proportionality, yes, Your Honor.
So in that statement, it's not meaningful relief, damn their torpedoes. It's meaningful relief provided it can be provided in a proportionate manner.
That's what case law supports, yes, Your Honor.
Proportionate to what?
Proportionate to the harm suffered.
And not to the offense, just proportionate to the harm?
Yes, Your Honor.
So let's take this case and let's say the person makes some ridiculous facts, is a triple murderer. And so you would say on these facts, the harm is still the harm suffered, which is the time spent in the ACC with all the same facts. And you'd say, disregard the nature of the offense, the proportionate meaningful relief is to disregard the BCD. You follow? I'm testing what's on the other side of the proportionality analysis.
I do, and the one assumption would be there that in order for the meaningful relief issue to come into play, the sentence would have had to have been small enough that we're even talking. If we're talking about a 30-year sentence, the chance of there being relief credit that would not be meaningful being applied to the sentence itself would be rare. So I think, to answer your question, the reason why we're not considering the offenses is because the offenses have already been considered by the sentence.
Let's say it was a serious offense, and it took 6 years to get to, person got 6 years confinement, and then 6 years in a day, it gets to the appeal level. And so the only meaningful relief that is left to be given is something dealing with the discharge. And you can play with the hypothetical.
Sure. And I understand what you're saying.
You can make a first snatching or something, you know, a rape or something. But from your standpoint, it just doesn't matter what's on that side of the equation. The only thing you're looking at is what was the nature of the Article 13 violation.
And I think in the scenario presented, it might be relevant, the nature of the offense, but I think the greater relevance is the delay is really the reason why we have the issue in the first place. And this Court has previously looked at that and said, you know, the invited delay, particularly if there's no demands for speedy trial, can preclude relief. And that's partly the appellant's fault if he did not emphasize or push that along. And so, I forget which case is offhand, I can get back to that in rebuttal, but the Court has specifically said, hey, we saw some relief here, but it's due to your own failure to move this case along, you're not afforded, there's no relief left to provide, and this is just disproportionate.
Let's take the example that was given. Assume that the responsibility all rests with the government, putting aside any relief that comes from appellate delay itself. So now you've got 6 years. Let's assume an early EAS so that there's no pay that can be given at that point. You're only looking at the severity of the offense. A lot of cases like Josie would have talked about the nature of these types of punishments. Why shouldn't we take into account, or why shouldn't the authority looking at the credit take into account the underlying offense?
I think in those situations they could.
Okay.
And it's certainly not the case we're dealing with here, because the members were not aware of it and it was only a 6-month sentence. The crimes were not particularly egregious.
What about the question of reduction of rank in this case? Is that on the table as far as meaningful relief?
It is possible. I don't believe it would provide meaningful relief, because the only thing that would really affect would be his pay. And marginally so, since he was provided his pay, forfeiture to defer.
What was his grade at the time of the sentence?
A1C, or
pardon?
A1C, E3.
E3. So if there was no reduction, wouldn't that be fairly significant relief to his spouse in terms of the funds that were provided at that point?
It would have been about 5 months relief, which only accounts for a third of the confinement credit. In margin, $200 per month would be the difference.
So in your view, is meaningful relief dollar for dollar, day for day? That's the only thing that will constitute meaningful relief?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I don't think we can put a dollar value on it. And that's the problem with punitive discharge, dismissal of charges, is you can't put a dollar value on it. And I think had the judge given day for day credit here, given the egregious facts, it might still warrant set aside the BCD. The judge actually considered 10 for one because he was so concerned, but he did exercise judicial restraint and did much less.
Counsel, I'm not sure I'm following your point in terms of why is the focus solely on the BCD and not on the reduction. That is, why is it not possible there would be cases in which it would be more meaningful to an individual to receive the suspension of the reduction as opposed to a change in the punitive discharge, recognizing the punitive discharge affects veterans' benefits, et cetera, but there may be cases in which that's the most meaningful relief that a person might want in a particular circumstance.
Absolutely. There are times when, and as this Court has unfolded, there are different options available for remedies. And in the right case, the reduction, disapproval of the reduction and forfeitures may be appropriate. Had we been looking at like a year's worth of confinement here, where he would have seen several months worth of relief from forfeitures, and the convening authority did not set aside the forfeitures, we may find meaningful relief by disapproving the reduction and providing the forfeitures. That would be fairly substantial.
So to focus on the position of the defense in this case more precisely, is it your view that if the only choice in this case is if we decide that this is not meaningful relief, that the only option available is the one of disapproval of the BCD, and that the defense is expressly stating that it is not requesting a change in the reduction in rank. If the court should determine that a change in the discharge is not warranted in this case as a matter of relief.
It would certainly be an alternate option.
So you're keeping that on the table then?
We would keep it on the table, but it's not our primary because what I'm looking at is what is the unexecuted portion that's available for meaningful relief. Certainly the reduction is available. Our position is it's not meaningful relief under the circumstances in this case where he was already, the forfeitures were set aside and it really is a marginal amount between E1 and E3 given his pay. And
counsel, what are we to make in this case, of the fact that, the CCA, exercising its broad powers under Article 66, looked at everything in this case and said, having given individualized consideration to this particular column, the nature of the offenses and all other matters in the record of trial, to include the pretrial confinement, so everything, we hold that the approved sentence is not inappropriately severe. So you want us to say that it was inappropriately severe because it was entitled to more relief than he got.
Again, my first part would be we're not arguing Article 66 sentence appropriate.
Well, I mean, I understand that you would like to not argue Article 66 because you definitely lose. But I don't understand how you can explain how we avoid Article 66 in light of that sentence and in light of the fact that the CCA included everything in its consideration of the appropriate sentence in this case to include the pretrial confinement.
Because, Your Honor,
because they could have said, we find that it's inappropriately severe under all the facts and circumstances of this case to include the pretrial confinement. They could have said that, right?
They could have, Your Honor. The problem was this is Article 13. Article 66 is a different function. And as this Court has, if I may, Your Honor.
Are you suggesting that the CCA isn't aware of that fact?
Yes, Your Honor, because they looked at it and said 305K controls, but 305K is not Article 13. It's a separate function
but
like
707. But 305K doesn't govern Article 66.
It does not, but, Your Honor, they were under misunderstanding because they thought that they could not apply it to a punitive discharge. They expressly said, in contrary to our arguments, that a BCD was available for meaningful relief. They said it wasn't.
I have a question about that if you're done with that side.
I don't know, Your Honor, if she's further.
A credit conversion, are you arguing that the CCA did not believe it could address the Article 13 violation through the discharge?
That's the way we're reading their opinion, is that it was not available, and they cited 305K to support that.
Well, they worked 305K over for the proposition that you can't do a conversion. But where in the opinion does it say that, as a separate matter, you can't address an Article 13 violation through reaching the discharge?
They don't.
You follow?
I do, Your Honor.
Two different things. It's one thing. Now, do you agree? I don't, when your opening statement, but not your brief, you seem to be of the view that, that this is not a case about credit conversion. That's an apple and orange issue.
Right, because conversion suggests there's some sort of formula. I don't believe there's a formula. I think it's contextual based on the harm that's
why are you, shouldn't you be here arguing not the 476 days and turning this into a math problem, but aren't you really arguing this is about appropriate relief, not appropriate in a 66 sense, about proper relief?
Yes.
For an Article 13 violation?
That's exactly what we're arguing, Your Honor.
And this is Article 13. why are you hung up on how many days are left over? Shouldn't you be trying to figure out what the Article 13 violation is and then calculating what the correct relief should be for that?
Well, we have that, Your Honor. We have the Article 13 violation from the judge. What we have, the argument for meaningful relief, is a small portion that actually was applied, and so we have a lot that wasn't. There are substantial portions of harm that have never been addressed because it's been such a small portion of the credit is actually.
So your beef's with the military judge as well, is it not?
No, Your Honor.
Shouldn't you, if you're up here arguing you should have gotten rid of the BCD, shouldn't you have said the military judge blew it because he focused on credits rather than the real harm, and the real harm equals a BCD?
I think that puts a judge in a challenging position because, as this court said in Varner, you know, there's unintended consequences when they look to mess with a sentence or reassess the sentence, and the preference was for credit because a judge doesn't have a crystal ball as to what the members are going to say the sentence is worth. or but he certainly could have said, "Hey, I'm going to provide relief, and that whatever sentences a judge, he will not serve any more confinement." He could have said that. Instead, he left it to the credit, and honestly, that puts us in a situation because he just didn't have a crystal ball as to what the jury was going to say.
So he didn't. Well, and then how's that an abuse of discretion?
It's not.
We're not arguing that.
We're arguing Article 13 compels that, and that's where the Air Force Court overlooked.
Okay. Now, was the Article 13 argument presented to the CCA?
It was presented in the broad ambit of their authority.
It was before them.
It was before them. Yeah. That's why they specifically said, "Hey, we're even considering meaningful relief. We're recognizing that's your basis for arguing for relief, but we're considering in the 66 context."
Yeah, we've plowed that ground already.
Sir.
Okay. Is this case Nelson?
It's close to Nelson, but I think it's different because we have far more egregious circumstances.
Well, but in Nelson, didn't they find intent to punish?
The judge here found both prongs of Article 13.
Well, but the judge specifically found there was no intent to punish, didn't he?
He did, although he, in his conclusion.
So it's not Nelson?
Not with the intent to punish, no.
Right, okay. And have we busted a BCD in a case like this since Nelson?
No, Your Honor, we have not.
Okay, so why is this the case to do it when it's not Nelson?
Because the harm is so extensive that I would wager the reason you haven't seen a case like this before.
This is the worst case since Nelson?
I think it's the worst case that got past relief at a lower level. That a convening authority may very well, in most cases, would see this and go, "I've got to do something to right the wrongs here." But this is a base that is on its fourth series of cases with violations. And I'd like to clear out, the judge at one point said there were two prior cases, but then his conclusions of law, he mentioned Junior as a third case. So we're dealing with a base that this is the violations have occurred three times in the past few years, and they're getting worse. So it's, you know, the stars are aligned, if you will, that this is a circumstance that just hasn't been presented in this case since Nelson.
Didn't the Air Force change the reg after Adcock to basically say, we're not, you know, no longer does it turn on Air Force requirements?
But that's correct. And the judge didn't look to the AFI. I see my time's expired.
You can answer the question.
I will point you, Your Honor, to your joint appendix. I believe it was page 76, where the Air Force trial counsel asked the judge, it's 75.
75.
They asked about whether this was he was saying it was a violation of the AFIs, and he clarified, "No, this is Article 13, because there's nothing about these conditions that are necessary to ensure his presence at trial," and he specifically funneled him in Article 13, not 305.
No, okay, so 305 is irrelevant, and the reg is irrelevant.
The reg was relevant in the sense that he said that the appellant was treated worse than Air Force inmates because they're bound by the AFI, and he specifically focused it on the fact that there was
wait a minute. Can you have it both ways? That seems to be what he's saying. You know, if the reg points to requirements, the standards imposed in the civilian facility, and not to the standards imposed in the Air Force facility, then what's the relevance of the fact that they're different?
And that goes to the first prong of Article 13, where he said there's no legitimate purpose for having these differences in this case.
So what he's saying basically is that it doesn't matter what the reg says.
He said there's no legitimate purpose served by making him spend 23 hours in segregation when he's been no harm, by having him wear pink underwear that nobody else has to wear, by not having contact visits when convicts can have that and he's been no disciplinary problem. He looked at the specific conditions and found no purpose anywhere, whether it was a reg or otherwise, that served to justify those differing conditions.
Thank you.
You have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the Court, I'm Captain Scott Jansen, and I, along with Mr. Gerald Bruce, represent the United States in this matter. The proper framework to follow in this case is RCM 305K and the cases which have adopted its language that you cannot trade excessive confinement credit for punitive discharge set aside, because confinement and punitive discharges are qualitatively different types of punishment.
That's the credit conversion issue, but the appellant's really arguing Article 13 relief. So let's stipulate that this isn't a credit conversion case.
Your Honor, I would draw the court's attention to United States versus King. That was a case involving Article 13 punishment. And in that case, this court held that the formula, the framework you use is RCM 305K.
Is it your argument then, the government's argument, that the only relief that can be granted for an Article 13 violation is 305 credit?
That's correct.
So if someone's in prison and an Article 13 violation is ongoing, a court would not have the authority to provide habeas relief and say, stop that. They could say, see me when you get out and I'll give you some credit. You follow? Is it really the government's position that the only thing a court or a judge can do to provide Article 13 relief is to give day-for-day credit?
Yes, Your Honor. In the sense that when there's a question of you have confinement credit, how do you attribute it? RCM 305K is the proper mechanism. Now, there's certainly always the capability for the CCA exercising its Article 66C authority to look at the entire matter and address it that way. But in terms of...
So you disagree fundamentally with the appellant that BCD, this isn't an issue of whether it's legally required to provide BCD relief. It can't be done.
Utilizing the RCM 305K framework, the answer is no.
Where in Article 13 do you get the statement that 305K is the relief mechanism? Your brief says that it's silent on this point.
Yes, Your Honor. It says that the appellant is entitled to relief, and then it says see RCM 305K, which...
So the president comes in, Article 13's out there, and the president can come in and say, the only relief that can be given for Article 13, I determine, is day-for-day credit.
Well, 305 does adopt other things besides day-for-day credit. It deals with, say, forfeitures and those things. But in terms of qualitatively different types of punishment, yes. And the support for that is that this court has adopted the 305K analysis in numerous cases. We cited...
Have we said so that we're doing so exclusively, or left the door open?
Well, this court, in the case I cited, Rosendahl, Sposa, and Josie cases, where it was established, the 305K is a framework, granted, of course, the president wrote the regulation, but this court adopted it, and the court is... It says this is the guidance, and the court is, I guess, silent.
No, counsel, and you, when you look at those cases, when you look at Yonk and Rosendahl, Spalstead, Josie, and Harris, in all of those cases, it seems to me that this court has left the door open. It has said that it wasn't disproportionate in this case, or this is not the appropriate case to take the action, or the evidence did not warrant setting aside, or the CCA did not abuse its discretion. So based on that language, it appears that this is something that can happen. It just hasn't been appropriate in those cases, even though they're talking about 305 as well.
Yes, Your Honor, but in these cases, the appellant is asking for a punitive discharge set aside, and this court held, at least in Rosendahl, Sposa, and Josie, it went directly to 305K. In the other cases, there was some discussion about, you know, in the Young case, it wasn't an abuse of discretion to set aside the punitive discharge, or in Harris, in light of the offenses that the appellant was convicted of, the granting of the relief would be disproportionate in harm. In those cases, yes, there hasn't been a strict tie to RCM 305K, but the cases of Rosendahl, Sposi, and Josie.
Let's take a look at Josie, where we said that reprimands, reductions, punitive discharges are so qualitatively different from other punishment that conversion is not required as a matter of law. So that's saying that it's not automatic, but does that say that it can never happen?
The government is saying that it can't happen as a matter of law of a traditional 305K analysis. Now, it is potentially possible through Article 66C authority that the CCA had, which is what happened in the Globke case, where they held that under the facts of the case, the only meaningful relief was a punitive discharge, and then they followed on saying that once we did this, then the sentence, there was no material prejudice to the substantial rights of the appellant. So they did the 66C analysis, and that would be the appropriate place for a court to address.
So do you see any difference between an Article 13 review for meaningful relief and an Article 66 review for appropriate sentence?
Your Honor, I believe that Article 66C review is broad enough to encapsulate the meaningful relief analysis, and that was done in this case where the appellant, the Court of Criminal Appeals, reviewed the entire case to include the punitive to include the pretrial confinement matters, and they held that it was not inappropriately severe. So it was already done in this case.
Well, this court obviously can't conduct a sentence appropriateness review, but we have conducted reviews on Article 13 as to whether or not there was meaningful relief.
Yes, Your Honor. This court has reviewed cases for in the Young case, it was a finding that there was no abuse of discretion. So we believe, the government believes, that the way you review that overarching concern would be through an abuse of discretion standard. And again, we assert, the government asserts, that that was not an abuse of discretion because they did consider it. And they stated so in their action.
Counsel, on page 2 of the slip opinion from the CCA, second full paragraph, last sentence says, in the present case, the convening authority credited appellant with the days awarded by the military judge and disapproved the judge forfeitures, leaving no other form of punishment to which the credit could properly apply. Why doesn't that suggest that the CCA looked at this as a case on which neither the BCD nor the reduction in rank were available for applying the credit, either at the convening authority level or at their level, understanding that they would reject, based on Josie and Rosendahl, any conversion? But in terms of the authority to give credit, not as a conversion matter, but as a meaningful relief matter, why doesn't that sentence suggest that the CCA viewed this case in which neither a punitive discharge or a reduction in rank could be affected as a matter of sentence credit for meaningful relief?
Well, Your Honor, the government believes that when the CCA was issued its opinion, that they were basing their decision on whether the request that was raised to them as an inappropriately severe sentence analysis determined that the field had already been set by this court. The RCM 305K addresses that analysis. However, they didn't shirk their duty by not doing a broader analysis for sense of purposeness for a justice analysis, and they did so and held that it was not inappropriately severe.
Well, aren't those two different things? And that is that the convening authority, that the CCA could decide that for purposes of appropriateness, which is a separate clause within Article 66, the sentence was appropriate. But for purposes of the correct in law provision of Article 66, they had decided that it was correct in law because they and the convening authority were prohibited from giving any meaningful relief with respect to either the discharge or the reduction in rank.
Yes, Your Honor. The CCA was tying the first part of Article 66 to this court's precedent that RCM 305K sets the boundaries. And in this case, and the government asserts here that RCM 305K, the precedent is very strong on that point.
Right. In other words, if we determine that 305 is linked inextricably to Article 13, and if we determine that Josie prohibits a convening authority from giving relief either as to discharge or reduction in rank, then this would be correct in law. But if we were to determine otherwise, that is, if we were to look at the precedents and say that they are providing a framework rather than a restriction, and that Josie was dealing with conversion rather than meaningful relief, then we'd have to take another look at that, wouldn't we?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Does the government take any issue with the military judge's findings?
No, Your Honor. The government didn't object either at the CCA level or the facts are what the military judge determined them to be.
Thank you.
When we're talking about meaningful relief, it's important to note two things we know that the appellant received meaningful relief in this case. The first is that he received 61 days of confinement credit, in the sense that he didn't have to go back to jail. And if you read in page 381 of his clemency, talks about how while he was at jail, he was missing a lot of things in his life: wedding anniversaries, Thanksgiving, and mother's birthday. 61 days is a significant amount of time. That is significant relief. The other matter is that he received from the convening authority a deferral of his forfeitures, and then at action 5 months later, there was a waiver, not approving the forfeitures. The government believes that is additional evidence that meaningful relief has occurred in this case. And the government does not believe that meaningful relief means total relief or perfect relief, just that meaningful relief is provided. And in many cases, this court has held that the meaningful relief, you tie it back into RCM 305K. There's been no case since Nelson where this court has overturned or set aside a punitive discharge, and that's a significant fact.
Does 305 occupy the field? I ask you the same question I asked the appellant.
According to King, the government believes yes, Your Honor.
Okay. We applied, but you're saying 305 is a 305. King is a straight holding that 305 occupies the field.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the quote says King is entitled to appropriate relief. And King was a question of Article 13, whether or not he was supposed to receive Article 13 credit. This court ultimately held that he was supposed to receive credit for 42 days. King is entitled to appropriate credit. See RCM 305K. We believe that is that holds, provides a holding that occupies the field. The government also believes that looking at the Harris case, certainly it is appropriate when you're making an analysis over meaningful relief. You need to look at not only the Article 13 issue, but you also need to look at what the offense is the appellant was convicted of. He had a 9 or 10 month period where he was engaged in abusing drugs, not just marijuana, but cocaine over multiple occasions. That's an important fact. The appellant cannot walk away from that fact, and that's should be part of this court's analysis.
Why is it part of the analysis if the only relief that can be given is credit and he's out of the jail?
Well,
it's irrelevant, isn't it, in that case?
Well, Your Honor, in the Harris case, the appellant was out of jail.
So that
And so this court, when it's doing that, there's two issues in Harris. One was the Article 13 issue. The other was meaningful relief. And the appellant was out of jail, and this court held that in light of the offense that he was convicted of, that it was the setting aside would be disproportionate to the harm he may have committed. So,
isn't that suggesting that 305 is not the only means of relief?
Uh, Again, yes, Your Honor. CCA could look at the matter, and it was looked at in this case, and the CCA determined that it wasn't appropriate. I have nothing else to say, Your Honor. May I briefly close?
You may.
Your Honor, the judgment approved sentence should be affirmed because RCM 305K and the cases that adopting this framework firmly provide, you cannot obtain punitive discharges for excessive confinement credit. Moreover, appellant has already received meaningful relief in this case, and therefore the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals did not abuse its discretion in awarding no additional relief.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I just have 3 points. First, I wanted to get back to Judge Baker. I mentioned there was a case where the court had said there was invited error because of post-trial delays. It was Yunk was the case that I was thinking of. The other 2 points I want to get to, the government argues 305K consumes the field, but nowhere in 305 does it even reference Article 13, or is there any evidence the President intended to limit. Rosendahl, in fact, said it really is a table of equivalencies, and in most cases it will be sufficient, but this Court has recognized it's not going to be sufficient in all cases. Lastly, with respect to forfeitures, the forfeitures were not for the necessarily benefit of the appellant. The SJR initially, timeline purposes, the defense submitted clemency before the SJR was prepared. The SJR said approve the forfeitures. It was only when the SJ realized they had failed to take note of the judge's recommendation that the forfeitures be disapproved because Airman Zarbatani's wife was completely innocent. And in fact, even the trial counsel agreed was a saint in this case. She was the whole reason the charges came forward. It was only in consideration of the judge's recommendation that they changed the recommendation to disapprove the forfeitures. There's no evidence the convening authority or anybody considered it for purposes of relief. It was to compensate the spouse who was directly part of this case but did nothing wrong, and they did not want to punish her. Unless there are any other questions, we ask for the PCD to set aside, and we rest on our boots.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess pending further order of the court.
Court stands adjourned until further order.